Blog Talk Radio.
Universe. This is your host, Doug Kennedy, here with my co-host, Grant Rubendust. Welcome, Grant.
Hey, thanks, Doug, and happy Friday night, everybody.
It's good to have everybody with us tonight. We got a very special guest with us, John Hutchison. The Hutchison Effect we'll be discussing here in just a moment. I'd like to encourage anyone that would like to ask John some questions tonight, feel free to call in. The number's there on your screen. And be happy to take your calls. We've also got a chat room. You can ask your questions in the chat room there as well. Without any further ado, let's introduce John Hutchison. He's most well known for the Hutchison Effect. The Hutchison Effect is not just one effect. It is many put together. The Hutchison Effect includes levitation of heavy objects, fusion of dissimilar materials such as metal and wood, the anomalous heating of metals without burning adjacent material, spontaneous fracturing of metals, and much more. And there's a lot more to what John does. John Hutchison, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Why, it's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to have you. Can you tell us, John, how did you get started in this kind of research? I mean, I've seen you and Grant. We've both seen you on documentaries for years. I remember the first time that I saw the effect, the Hutchison effect. I mean, looking at that thinking, no way. Oh, give me, oh, come on, really? You know, I've gone through all these curiosity and disbelief and everything, but how did you get started in this?
Oh, well, kind of at a young age, I got involved in it, and I started experimenting with Tesla coils and static generators and transmitters, and that's produced some unusual effects way, way back in time. That I deemed not too interesting to me, rather kind of intriguing, but not interesting, but very interesting to many other people who then promoted it to the U.S. government, to SAIC, as I understand it, in Washington State University. That led into demonstrations that were under controlled experiments with the government, U.S. Army intelligence, and also McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation, George Jack Hauck, and then the Canadian government, and then later on the German government. But then I broke away from all that and went into doing it for television shows. But I got started at a very young age, starting mostly with chemistry first, and then radio transmission stuff, and then into machine tool making and gunsmithing and all kinds of crazy things that, I don't know, I guess you call me a gadget person, but I got into this and I had amassed a 22-ton laboratory in the 1980s.
Wow.
We were doing incredible things with the levitation of almost anything, as well as making things disappear and reappear and metals going into different formations and contortions, which have been analyzed quite a bit over the years. And well, the lab was actually, the main lab was shipped to Germany, and it was seized by the Canadian government. So I rebuilt a smaller lab up here in New Westminster, British Columbia, which gained a lot of attention most recently to the city of New Westminster, British Columbia, the city hall was barraged by complaints and weird things going on. I have a supportive mayor who was here in person with an alderman, and he was saying at that time he's getting reports of citizens in distress and concrete breaking apart and that. So it all came to a head after I gave many demonstrations this beginning of this year and last year.
Wow.
John, do you consider yourself a student of Tesla? Did you follow his works very closely as a young person, or do you still base a lot of your work that you're doing now on some of the stuff that he did?
Well, I did all the Tesla equipment. I was able to replicate it all the way back to the turn of the century equipment that I was buying and wiring cables. So I'm a student of Tesla, as well as other, as I call them, pioneers in science and that. I learned a lot from Tesla.
So when did you do your first successful levitation experiment?
1979. And at that time it was reported by my landlord's son, and later on by my landlady, who got rather angry, saying, "You guys are just sitting around watching stuff float in the air, should be out digging ditches around the house." Yeah, really. And
you gotta love it.
Kind of funny that way. And there was a gentleman that came in one day and saw the stuff levitating. He ran out of the basement of the home and reported it to the news people, who then reported something. I don't have a copy of that news.
Now, John, were you trying specifically to do levitation experiments, or was that a byproduct of some other research you were doing?
I was into more of the radio transmission, as well as high voltage golf arcs and corona observations in the dark. And this is a byproduct of it, which I thought was, at the time I didn't think much of it. I thought it was okay. I guess high voltage can do that. Although I tried to reference that in books and that. And it was brought to the attention of the scientific community actually by Mel Ernest Winfield, who was taking photographs of it and presenting it to an ESP fair. That grabbed the attention of, the people that promoted me, Alex Pizzero and George Hathaway, who saw these photographs and then interviewed me, then later on wanted to see a demonstration, which I showed them. And then they started to promote it to the U.S. Pentagon, and that brought in many, many different folks who observed the results and wrote up the reports. So, interesting stuff. I mean,
no kidding. So, now when you did the first levitation experiment, you kind of stumbled on that, right?
Well, basically, it is that. There's nothing I've ever planned to do. I never planned to promote any of these things, or to even talk about them. I happened to just mention it one time to Mel Winfield, who then got very excited and wanted to come over and see a demonstration himself. So he took photographs of things floating in the air and put it in one of his books called The Science of Actuality. And still he's promoting his book on that. But he started to claim that he discovered it. But that's Mel.
Oh, really? Ooh.
It doesn't bother me too much, really. It's tend to bother Alex Pizzero, Colonel Alexander, and George Hathaway, who were basically the team that surrounded me and promoted me into all the different realms I've been through.
So that
what type of I'm sorry, Doug. I was just going to ask, what type of applications did the military think they could use the levitation effect for?
Oh, I think for reduction of radioactive waste, for space propulsion technologies, and metallurgical sciences. Oh, I have a list somewhere. I have the actual reports on that. Many different applications. There's a wealth of information, especially in space propulsion, the Star Wars program. It all started basically with the Star Wars program. It was one of the first contractors demonstrating stuff on it. And then they started to get involved with Star Wars.
Okay, so that levitation video that, well, I don't know, it's the one, I'm sure you've got a number of them, but the one I'm thinking of is the one that I saw, gosh, I don't know, what, 10, 12 or more years ago, something like that, with the cardboard, or not cardboard, but the plywood base, and what did you have on there? You had the, I think you had a bowling ball, you had the bleach container, you had
something.
I mean, it's been around a while.
That one, those videos are from the 1980s.
Yeah.
And there's maybe about 5 hours of videos, stock footage on all those different kinds of levitations like that. And then there's another set going back. Well, actually, McDonnell Douglas has them. I have a copy. And that's spanning basically all the 80s, and there's the early pre-video stuff that's interesting. It's on Super 8mm film. And then there's another whole new set that started in 1999 of things levitating in this, actually in this apartment. It may sound crazy, but they did capture it and put it on television. So I have maybe about 30 hours of this from news material.
Cool.
And I think some of the fun things was the Red Bull can I levitated.
Oh, yeah. I've got some YouTube videos on the website, too.
Hey, John, how long have you been able, what's the longest period of time you've been able to sustain an object in a state of levitation?
I think it must have been last year when Rob Shimone was here. He was a host for a TV show called Polar Switch Productions. And he said a suspended canister for about 20 minutes.
Wow.
That's pretty incredible. What kind of power does that require, John? Does it require a lot in order to do that?
No, not actually. That's, when I started getting away from the Tesla machinery into vacuum tube technology, I found that the vacuum tube technology pick up a lot more power because it's all based on power. So I am running roughly with starting with 75 watts of energy in the early days for a television demonstration. And then up to 4,000 watts, roughly.
Hmm.
With the modern stuff.
Doesn't sound like much.
No, that's actually not that much. But the wave fronts and gravity waves, when was the last demonstration here? It was with Tom Sky. And he got affected by these waves, and so did the city. 10 city square blocks. The complaints were pouring in the city hall, and all of a sudden the firemen came here, and the mayor was all upset over it, and everybody's really upset on this. And I didn't realize that that happened. I didn't feel anything, but other people did and reported it to the news media and to the city hall, and that's...
What exactly were they feeling, John? What was going on?
Some kind of a wave or a funny feeling, like weightlessness or being pushed or moved or something like that. And because I started getting emails in from physicians in this region here.
Hmm.
And I met with a few of them, and they thought, well, perhaps what it was doing is destroying parasites. I said, gee, come on, you're kidding. Hmm. And then another fellow was saying, another doctor was saying, this may explain what was going on in New Westminster. But he was very tight-lipped about it. And on February 29th, I got a phone call from the New Westminster Fire Department. They've been here before, by the way, many times. But this time they knew everything about me and came and talked to me, interviewed me, and then made an order that all this machinery has to be cleaned out of here.
Really?
Yeah, the order was pretty strong, and so then I've Well, an angel kind of intervened in all this, and he was actually wrote the laws for these people, and he made a deal with them. After the first inspection, they said, well, you're making progress, and then I was fined $100, and then my friend, he made a deal with them that we'll do it this way. So they agreed to that, and, well, things worked out fine, because the fire inspector was here yesterday, actually, the head guy of New Westminster. He looked around, he looked happy, and said, this is really great. He's in a good mood, and he bought a fire nozzle from me for $20. And I kid, well, I mean, he's not to get a fire nozzle.
Oh,
so he sent me a nice email, and I sent him a nice email back.
So you're good to go for the time being, huh?
Yes, I just answered an email from ABC saying that I'd be happy to do an interview in here.
Yeah, cool. Now, was it back in the 80s that your equipment was seized?
But roughly when I was in Europe, the Canadian government stepped in and even avoiding a Supreme Court order, took all the equipment and secretly were putting it away somewhere. Until the newspapers found out about it, and then they told it off in the press.
Huh. So where was that?
And I was in Germany. They didn't know where I went to. They didn't know where I was, so they sort of saying, maybe the inventor of this thing just levitated away in the sky. It's a funny story. So NBC got involved, calling me up, saying, are you okay, Mr. Hutchison, blah, 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 and other people were calling in, into Austria, actually. And then the Interpol came and interviewed me and said, are you all right and you're not being held hostage? I said, no, absolutely not. What's going on over North America?
Really?
Some people are making a lot of stories, and there's a lot of heat going on around here. And so I phoned the Minister of Environment from Austria, and he said, well, you know, you could be arrested if you return to Canada. I said, no, I think I'll stay. I'll live here in New York. Thanks.
Why would you be arrested?
I don't know. He didn't give an explanation. The DND were involved, and the Canadian government, the police, and everybody under the sun were involved in this whole big mess. So as time passed, I did have to return here because my lady was doing a major motion picture thing. And I had to come back to deal with it. She said, you have to deal with it. So I came back here. I was not arrested or anything. And
always
a just dealt with what was left over from the lab, which was a bunch of antique guns and machine guns and stuff like that, which I decided, well, I really don't want to hang on to this stuff. So I had an auction and sold that off and some other equipment. And I was going to return to Europe. But then, oddly, my lady then finished her film and was coming over to see me, and at the same time, Japan got interested in what I was doing, and then proposed, they actually wrote some books on me and videos, and then proposed I go on lecture tours, which I did do in 1994 and 95. I was in the 95 lecture tours with Ryan O'Leary, and he wrote it up in his book on, I forget the name of the book, but he wrote it up in one of the many books.
So what year was that? What year was that?
When I was in Japan?
No, that you were in Austria or Europe. And
my time period there was beginning of 89 until 1991, beginning of it.
Okay. That's when they confiscated your equipment.
That's right. It was to be actually shipped to Germany in two large shipping containers, but it was seized by the Canadian government.
Was the German government interested in your work, John? Is that what the deal was, and the Canadians objected to that?
That's what I understand. Yeah.
And what did the German government want you to do?
They actually were going to put the lab up, and I was doing experiments for them.
I see.
So, they were trying to fire, but, of course, there's a lab of keys.
All right, so this the Hutchison effect, as it's become come to be known, the levitation. I mean, can you talk about that? I mean, I don't know how much you can or are willing to talk about it, but I mean, how's it happening? What do you think is going on?
Oh, I think it's been mainly written by scientists.
I think it's really a magnetic field.
Okay, and that's causing these things to just levitate.
Yeah, levitation or
Oh, there is. Okay.
Well,
let's see. You know what we're gonna do? Let's see what our time frame is here. Just a second.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not you. It's just what's going on here. Sometimes we get that stuff. Give me one second. You know, let's do this, John and everybody. We're gonna take just we're gonna go to a break just a few minutes early, and John, we'll see if we can get that correct, and we'll come back and we'll continue the discussion. And folks out there, please join us in the chat room if you'd like to ask a question. You can call it live. Call us live. Boy, I'm looking at too many things at once here. Call in live, ask John questions. We'd love to take your questions. I'd love to take them in the chat room as well. Join us. We're going to be back here in just a few minutes right after the break, so hang tough with us.
The West Georgia Paranormal Research Society is composed of individuals with a common goal, the scientific investigation of the paranormal. It is our hope that these investigations will allow those of us in the paranormal community to bring about answers that will benefit us, as well as helping to educate the general public. We approach all investigations and questions with the utmost professionalism and confidentiality required for the situation. If you are experiencing strange occurrences around your home or place of business, such as unexplained noises, smells, or visual phenomenon, these could be possible signs of paranormal activity. If you're interested in finding some answers to these questions, or if you'd like to have our team investigate the activity, visit us at www.wgprs.com for more information. Research, assistance, understanding. We're here to help you.
shadows. In the sky, it's Paranexus Universe. Darkness follows.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly with my co-host, Grant Rubin. Dennis, welcome back, Grant.
Hey, thanks, Doug.
I don't know if you guys can hear it. That music sounds pretty funky to me. That's never done that before. It's like it's got a bad motor on the tape player or something. I know there's no tape player, but if you're in chat and it's sounding funky to you, if you'd let me know, because I may have to upload that music again. Anyway, welcome back. We're talking with John Hutchison, the Hutchison Effect. Maybe you're familiar with his work of levitation and variety of other things. He's been on a number of documentaries. In fact, just a couple of days ago, I was watching Earth's Black Hole documentary on the History Channel, and very interesting stuff. John, welcome back.
Oh, pleasure to be back with you today.
Yeah, really interesting. So let's go back to the levitation thing. Can you explain what were you trying to do when you stumbled on this whole levitation thing? What was your focus of research?
My focus of research was replication of old turn-of-the-century Tesla technologies. I was fascinated by older machinery like that, and Tesla was a prime example for me to replicate all those old machines. So I was reading a lot of patents and his book by O'Neill, and got very inspired to build these machines, which luckily in this area here in Vancouver, there was a lot of electrical machinery outlets that were, I guess, been here for many, many decades, and they have ancient turn-of-the-century equipment, which they were very happy to give me and to get rid of it. So some of these actual machines Tesla would have used at that time period. Like he had a lot of machinery himself that he built, but he'd also rely on what they call factory-produced meters and rotational motors and that kind of thing, which luckily were laying all over the place up here. So I actually had the same units, not exactly the same, but duplicates of what Tesla had in equipment. I think he'd have an old transformer from 1890. That would be something I'd find, or
wow,
switch gear and that kind of stuff.
And
what was Tesla trying to accomplish with some of his? Maybe if you could help our audience, I may not be familiar with what Tesla was trying to do. And you know, did the powers that be at the time that Tesla was trying a lot of his experimental work kind of keep him down a lot, John? Didn't he have a competition with Edison at one point in time about direct current versus AC, alternate current and DC?
Very much so. Yeah, he had a competition there with Thomas Alva Edison. And that's just one example. So George Westinghouse was fascinated by what Tesla was doing, and then he was basically the funder at the time for Tesla to make these unique polyphase motors, which Tesla did do, and went into production. George Westinghouse did. So in that time period, it was the Westinghouse company, plus many other electrical machinery companies like that.
And isn't essentially the difference there, John, that Westinghouse knew that if they went with the type of power that he wanted to do, that it would be more profitable. Whereas Tesla said that with his was a direct current, that it would be more accessible and cheaper.
Well, with direct current, you'd have to build a power station on every city block, and it was totally hard, which that would be extremely expensive. George Westinghouse, with the alternating current, realized that this kind of energy can be transmitted anywhere with high voltage to any substation. So Edison, of course, was all upset over this whole thing, and he started doing all kinds of crazy things with alternating current, like electrocuting dogs in public and that kind of stuff, saying it's highly dangerous, it'll kill you. And what Tesla did was quite unique in his demonstrations was he didn't use 60 cycles. He used maybe 100,000 cycles of high voltage and lit up the entire audience by holding a lady's hand because the high frequency stuff runs outside on the body's outer surfaces, not through the main organs. So he just blew them all away by that experiment of his. It's kind of like if I was to put my hand on a Tesla coil and I'd have sparks shooting out of my finger, and that was, again, projected into something that would run it. So Tesla got even.
Yeah, for sure. Did Tesla leave a lot of his plans behind? Because I'm not as well versed on Tesla as you probably are, but I had read that when Tesla died, they came into his apartment or his home or wherever, and they took all of his information, all of his plans, pending patents. And I just wondered if there's much left that a person can really take a look at or build from.
Well, there's quite a bit out there that has been publicized. There's a Colorado Spring note that's available to the public, but the FBI did go in and take all the documentation. But prior to that, too, was a lot of this documentation leaked out into different areas, different people who were involved with Tesla. One case in point was Thomas Lee Richardson of Vancouver, Canada here, where a lot of that documentation wound up in his home, which I've personally seen. Later on, when Thomas Lee Richardson got ill, the government took over because he didn't have any relatives, so they had that documentation. Then I was contacted yet by another person from San Francisco, whose great aunt worked with Tesla, and she had a lot of the documentation. But unfortunately, it was auctioned off when she passed away, and he was doing a paper trail. Information. He phoned me, and we talked. He was a banker, and he and his wife, they were going to come up and interview me, but they never did come up. That was way back in the 80s. They'll have his phone number in my address book. And so a lot of this documentation has leaked out, is around somewhere hidden in some cellar or backed away somewhere in an antique store, perhaps.
Well, Tesla certainly seems to be a guy who was way ahead of his time, and I just wondered, do you think that because he was so unorthodox and
okay, everybody, I don't know if we're back on yet or not. If we are, if you're in chat, would you let us know if you can hear us? Here we go, I think we're back on now. Okay, thank you.
Okay, great.
If you guys can, Grant, if you want to sing to them for just a minute and...
I don't think they would enjoy that at all, Doug. Perhaps you can give us a demonstration of your pipes and do a little singing.
You know, I'd love to, but I've got to get John back on the line.
Okay.
Which I'm doing right now.
Well, so, we'll give it a whirl, see if we can get John back on here and get talking about Tesla again.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened, folks. Just everything decided to crash. Hey, John.
Well, that's the first for us.
Sorry about that. Everything kind of crashed on us there, but we're all back now, so... Grant, if you want to reiterate that question and for John.
Gosh, where was I? Oh, yeah. John, the question was, do you think that because Tesla was so unorthodox, he kind of distanced himself? That's why mainstream science at the time kind of distanced itself from him?
In a way, he had a lot of friends, though, in that time period who were scientists.
But it just seems like he's never gotten the recognition that he really deserves.
No, he's buried in history. And that is kind of unfortunate. So it's just a new movement in the last couple of decades that brought him back to life.
Okay, so another aspect of your research, John, is that metals change structure, I guess is a good way to put it. Is that using the same experimentation as the levitation?
Same kind of experimentation. And some kind of frequencies, for some reason, when these objects don't levitate, and then turn into other materials or other alloys, they sometimes turn soft and gooey. And sometimes they'll start emitting some strong light from them.
So you're saying you've got a selection of items there that you're experimenting with. Some of them will levitate, but the ones that don't change molecular structure? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, and that's one of the main things that seems to happen is the metals, any kind of metals, from steel to brass, metals will turn to like jelly configurations. And actually, you find in some of the metals that were analyzed, they found other pieces of material like wood and sawdust and bits of hair and dust and stuff like that under analysis.
Embedded?
Yeah, pardon?
Embedded in the metal?
Absolutely.
Well, how do you explain that? That sounds almost like, I can't even find the word. It's like phasing in and out of time or something. Time and
much. We've had that happen quite a number of times.
Really? Tell us about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. We had one time appear in front of us this multicolored rainbow thing that appeared all around us, and I froze with the camera, and the camera was still running, which captured it all, and I thought, what is all that? And during different views of it, you can actually see like almost like entities in there somewhere.
Really?
The original tape is actually an 8mm film. You put it onto a video, then you start seeing different levels through the video on that adventure we had a long time ago. And later on, we had similar things happen to the point where they were so predictable. My friend at the time, Alex Sheresheski from the Soviet Union, he was taking pictures of what we named Carl. It was a red kind of misty thing that appeared out of nowhere and then float through the ceiling. And Alex said, this is weird energy. In Russia, we're kind of used to that kind of stuff. But I was thinking, okay, this is getting interesting.
So an entity?
Big pardon?
It was like an entity? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It was Carl, we called him. I was with them, not with George Hathaway and Alex Caceros, but actually George Hathaway, who owns Pinnacle Oil International now, and then another fellow, and it was sponsored by Boeing Aerospace Corporation. We had a lot of crazy things happen in the late 80s that were quite unusual. And also, I should mention my webmaster has encountered this strange stuff, too. Who has the www.hutchisoneffect.ca. He's a student of mine, which I taught him how to build these special coils and the Ark of the Covenant, and he did a lot of experimentation. And he actually put it on a video, which he submitted to Paris Hilton's website, www.bff.com. And I saw it for the first time, and I was impressed in what he has accomplished in his research. And I said, wow, that he was experiencing blackouts and freezing in time and space. What's he relaying to me? I haven't experienced freezing in time and space, but such things as water boiling on concrete and similar effects, I'd say broad range compared to the refined things that I was doing, but nevertheless quite interesting. So
you have things phasing in and out of this dimension. Is that fair to say?
I would say so. It was actually recorded by the Canadian government, who loosely released some reports but kept all the videos classified as a matter of national security. And on analysis of the 8mm film, they found that some of these metals would disappear, momentary transparency of the metals. So they would vanish and reappear. You could actually see through them.
That's really interesting. And does this, does this happen every time you do the experiment?
On and off. Not all the time. It's more of a rarer type of effect. But like, I'm, how can I explain this? I'm really, like, when I'm doing the demonstrations, I'm very busy with the machinery.
Mm-hmm.
So the film crews or whoever's filming will be focused in on filming, and I rarely see the stuff myself. But they will report it and show me on the videotapes what they discovered or found. And during a National Geographic film shoot, Nancy O'Donnelly, her hair started to rise, and she got scared, and they all stopped filming, say, are we going to be okay? And I said, yeah, there's no problems. Nothing different.
So, electricity.
Probably electrostatic, but then there was a little flame that appeared in the room, which I couldn't explain why it was there, and I went in and extinguished it. It was just sitting on a piece of wood.
A flame on a piece of wood?
Yeah, just an ordinary flame. Then the chain started to melt.
Hmm.
And the chain, parts of the chain fell down. I got a lot of chains in here that was support equipment that.
Okay, I see. So when you're doing your experiment, John, are you focusing this levitating effect, whatever it is or however you're harnessing it, is it difficult for you to focus?
If I have the equipment, it's like operating, let's say, an airplane maybe during a storm or something like that, I guess.
Okay.
It would be one way of putting it. You're just observing your controls, focus, and base, and frequency shifting, and that kind of thing.
Okay, so... I want to ask you this. When you're doing your experiment, what are you using to generate the field? Is it like the Tesla coil? I mean, what are you using to actually beam at it, or however you do it?
Well, it's kind of like RF operators and antennas. But the other thing is that multiple frequencies are sitting out there in a certain pattern from very low frequency. Ultra-low to X-band radar frequency, and that's covering the RF range, broadband and kind of waveforms, and also high voltage pressure is activated, and electrostatic energy is poured in there, and I use weak magnetic fields to actually steer the electrostatics in certain patterns. I'm finding more and more that there's another type of effect here that seems to be mass-orientated. It seems to extract something out of metals or something heavy, some subatomic particles. Because during the U.S. government tests, I didn't get any results with neon sign transformers. I got away from that, and I started using regular substation transformers and also extremely high-voltage X-ray transformers, and the results were incredible. So I learned a lot from the frequencies, replicate them through RF generation and RF amplifiers here, and get away eventually from the Tesla coils to modified RF generation equipment and modified high voltage equipment to replicate the fields that I was producing in the early days. I still can't get away from the high voltage. I need that, as well as the electrostatics.
So are you able to, I mean, do you have it down where you're able to replicate it on demand?
When I start filming, restarting again from, I started doing this here for Fox TV and a few other TV people, and I took all the equipment down, all the wires and cables. I thought, well, they can buy footage from Griffin Productions, which they were doing, and I'd do the interviews and that. So then this brought to my attention in 2006 that it would be nice to see some demonstrations for the Disclosures Project people. So I thought, okay, I'm going to hook everything up again, recalibration, and started testing it, and got some interesting results. I said, what the heck, you know, I'm going to leave everything hooked up, and so I did. And on demand was pretty good. I did that for Disclosure, then for National Geographic, for History Channel, for a bunch of other TV folks that came and gone out of here, China Television, Japanese TV. So it was on demand. I could sit down and fire it up, and away it would go. And the most dramatic, of course, was with radio host Rob Simone for Polar Shift Productions, which hasn't aired yet. They're waiting for a broadcaster, maybe NBC. But that was really dramatic stuff that happened last year. Hmm. And then I did one for a scientific team from Germany around Christmas time for 10 days. Then after that for Tom Skye. He's the one who got hit by the fields, and that also went way out into 10 city square blocks in New Westminster here.
So John, when these folks, you know, are coming to visit you and they're observing you, are they going back and trying to replicate the same sort of mechanisms and techniques that you're using?
Not production people. It's the scientists. Yes, they have an interest in what they see here, and they probably are trying to replicate it. There has been some statements of replication done. One of my fans is a well-known scientist, Ken Childers. He's replicated some of the metal aspects of it on a microscopic level, actually.
Oh, that's interesting.
Charged cluster technology. And he was to come here for a demonstration again. But hasn't shown up yet. And, of course, all this fiasco with the city of New Westminster, it slowed things down quite a bit.
Hey, John, how would you say that that your work has evolved since 1980? Where would you bring us from 1980 to 2008?
Well, let's say 1980, we did some major effects, maybe a couple in a day's time. And then that got more accelerated by major effects per hour in the late 80s. And to now, it was like a sit down and in 5 minutes have stuff going all the time.
Wow. So you made a lot of headway.
Oh, absolutely.
And you have a lot of cool equipment.
Did a lot of stuff. I took a lot of footage of it, too.
It looks cool, John.
Yes.
And you've gotten some of that stuff off of what? I mean, everywhere. Ships and Navy ships or?
Oh, I got a lot off of warships that I worked on. I volunteered my time to work on four Navy destroyers. Within walking distance down to the river here. Being into engineering and cannons and artillery and warships, I always had a fascination for warships. It's like I dived in and gone to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered on the work for you guys, whether you like it or not. So they call me later on a good worker and put me in command of the whole project. So,
wow.
John, you mentioned earlier about the Philadelphia experiment. Do you see a correlation between your work that you're doing and the stuff that went on in the supposedly in the Philadelphia experiment or later on at Montauk?
Absolutely. I replicated some of the Philadelphia experiment stuff back in 2006.
Can you kind of elaborate on that for us?
For sure. I used a foot-long model ship that I was able to test here in a small tub of water. And what happened was that the ship itself started to phase a little bit in and out of the camera. And I can't tell you if it was the camera doing that, but I noticed also that it started to vibrate, the water started to vibrate and levitate, and the bark should jump off the ship into the water.
Hmm.
And I believe that was all videotaped. And I think there's a small segment somewhere out there on the internet of that.
Hmm. Have to look for that one.
It's the Philadelphia experiment. And I was trying, like, I can't, when it comes to computers, like, how do you upload a video on dial-up?
That's a challenge.
I have these crates and crates and crates of tapes here. Of all kinds of weird and wonderful effects. But I try and get like 1 megabyte of stuff I'm trying to upload to Blogger. I can't do it.
No, I know. You need cable, DSL.
Yeah, that was bad. I got a little bit uploaded on Paris's website that was strange because I had 8 megabytes that actually uploaded. I said, wow, it works.
Sucked it right up, didn't it?
So, like Jeff,
what do you think? I'm sorry, guys. What did you think? Do you think, first of all, the Philadelphia experiment was legitimate? And do you think that the government was actually using Tesla kind of technology to accomplish that?
That's what I understand from some of my research and also from confirmation from my partner in crime there, Ron Maloney of Ghost Hunters. He got access to a lot of information and confirmed that it was Tesla technology used at that time.
Because it certainly seems that some of the things that were reported to have happened with the, I think it was the, was it the Eldridge, where the guys were kind of morphing into the ship and phasing in and out, kind of is in line with what you've been experiencing.
Yeah, actually, we had an entire building built up here.
Really?
Sounds incredible and crazy, but even to me it sounded crazy, too, because my partners were trying to get the equipment insured, and the insurance man said, well, I went to the building, and there's no building there, and so George got very interested and asked him many questions about, well, did you see a two big 8-8 in red on a white background? And this man said, yes, he did. And what was next to it? And he said, just an empty lot. So we surmised after many interviews with this insurance man that the building disappeared, the entire building. So he wouldn't come back. He said, I don't know what you guys are doing, and you sound crazy, and why would I come back and look at an empty lot? I don't know what your game is. And he got angry and hung up the phone.
So he wouldn't even go back and look again?
No, absolutely. He thought we were pulling a joke on him, some sort of sick joke. So he was really angry at that.
Have you considered the fact that he really didn't want to insure it in the first place and just made up the story?
Well, no, I don't think so. He was determined to come. We had the money, and he was. It was actually Boeing Aerospace, and George and Alec and I, all the stuff needed to be insured by law, so he wouldn't come around.
So
and
how?
Got another agent come around and insure everything.
Well, did the other one find it?
No, he didn't come around. He was there, and he said he saw an empty lot. And he thought we're playing some kind of joke on him. Like, maybe we're going to...
Well, how do you explain that the building itself disappeared? I mean, is that as a result of your experimentation?
We think so. I mean, the entire building is a large building.
I mean, is this next door to you or something, or...
Pardon?
Was the building next door to you? Was it within range of your equipment?
Well, you had the equipment right in it.
Oh, so I see what you're saying. So you were there, and he came around and couldn't find you.
That's right. It sounds crazy, but it seems to conform to maybe what the Canadian government reports on the invisibility of the metals.
Interesting. All right, folks, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break here in just a minute, and we're going to come back with John Hutchison talking more about that. And when we do come back, John, I'm going to ask you your thoughts on any connections to paranormal research or paranormal effects or even seeing paranormal effects. And I'd like to thank our listeners for listening to us tonight. We've still got one more segment to go. In the meantime, if you get a chance, go take a look at paranexus.org. We've been adding some different things to it. It is growing in membership, and we're adding content. In fact, we just established an international standards committee that is being chaired by paranormal researcher Dusty Smith, so we're getting that off the ground. Also just added a Paranexus TV channel that's got some different feeds and different things there that we'll be adding more content to that as well. So go take a look at paranexus.org, an association of paranormal researchers, parapsychologists, ufologists, cryptozoologists. We'd love to have you as a member. And again, don't forget, you can call in live if you've got questions for John. We'd love to take them. either on the phone or in the chat room. Keep that in mind. Hang with us for just a moment. We'll be back.
Hi, this is Doug Kelly, founder of the Spirit Team. We perform professional paranormal research and investigations at no charge to you. If you are experiencing mysterious events in your home or business, please contact us. We maintain your privacy and we won't think you're crazy. And if you're a paranormal researcher, we offer an accredited certification course that will enhance your knowledge of the paranormal field and raise credibility with your clients. For more information, please visit our website at spiritteam.org. That's spiritteam with one T, .org.
Is there a suppression of UFO and alien information by our government?
Does the soul continue on after we die?
Climb aboard the black ship of Paranormal Radio with your host, Captain Jack, on Contact Talk Radio and KRWM 106.9 FM HD3. Or visit WPRTRadio.com for more information.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly, your host, along with Grant Reuben Dunst, my co-host. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. How you doing this evening?
Always good when I'm talking to you, dude.
Oh, absolutely. It's great.
You have that magical laugh. You know, it's just a matter of trying to figure out something funny so we'll hear it. Was that funny? Okay.
There you go.
It must have been funny. So, cool. We are talking with a special guest tonight, John Hutchison. Welcome back, John.
Oh, pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah, some interesting stuff. John, of course, has been experimenting with levitation and a number of other things over quite a number of years, or decades, should we say now, and been on a lot of documentaries with the Hutchison Effect, and we're talking about that. And Grant, you, before we get to Grant, just a reminder, if anybody has any questions, you'd like to call in and ask John live, the number is there on your screen. It is 347-945-7799. Love to take your call or your questions in chat. Grant, take it away.
Well, I was just, John and I during the break were kind of talking about, I wanted to focus on, or have him focus on, the applications of the research he's been doing on space propulsion. So, John, take it away. What can you tell us about, what do you personally think the applications might be, and how practical would it be to, you know, get there? What's it going to take for us to get to some point where we can use it as a propulsion system?
I think actually as a propulsion system or a spaceship than that, it would be perfect for going fast in light travel because you can manipulate the light barrier, which is 300 meters per second. And the application would be like a whole range of space travel and possibly warp drive. Because they have to do some experiments that they can maximum speed of light. And this kind of technology incorporates gravitons and time particles that allows that a spaceship has its own self-propelling gravity kind of environment. At the same time, allowing you to put up a force field around the spaceship to propel any kind of meteorite and harmful radiation.
Yeah, got to have that. Huh. All right, so, John, has there ever been any connection with some of the things that you've seen with what some people may report as ghosts or spirits or anything like that?
Actually, it was, in some respect, yes. I've gotten reports of people seeing things move around by themselves. Like ghosts would move them around or psychokinetics.
Mm-hmm.
And strange lights, strange sounds in the air were reported to me. Although I am a follower of parapsychological studies,
mm-hmm. So
I realize that people can actually communicate to one another through thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been studying all the progresses and researches of the Stanford Research Group and Neotic Science Group, as well as Japan. And in some cases, they find that certain brain patterns take form when somebody's communicating or thinking of something. And in my personal experiments, I notice that lack of sleep makes me highly, highly open to the point where I get an ESP rating maybe of about 80%.
Hmm. Have you experienced it?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah? Like cool stuff?
Oh, yeah, it's all cool stuff.
Yeah, like what?
Kind of like if I can sense somebody's going to say something or the phone's going to ring or I feel somebody's going to call or come here, it usually comes out like that. Depending on my levels of sleep patterns, food intake, vitamin intake. I'm into life extension, by the way, in biochemistry, too. So I've been playing with this ever since I was a kid, and people would give me an ESP rating or other kind of tests like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would be like 50-50. Other times it's lack of sleep. It's around 80%. I've seen where one of my ladies, exes, would say, well, John, you know, you should phone that antique store that you have that stuff down there, and which I've never phoned them. And after she said that, boom, the phone rang.
Huh.
So Corinne herself had these talents.
Do you think that your technology might provide some basis for helping us to understand what's exactly going on with some of these spirit sightings, the ones that can't really be attributed to psychokinesis?
I think so. Absolutely, yes.
I'm
exploring also quantum physics that seems to go in these realms too, like manifestation of positive things coming towards somebody. I've been experimenting with that quite a bit too. I think some people call it the secret. Well, it's really just working your mind in a special way to put out energy fields into the quantum realm to attract. So this interests me quite a bit too.
Well, like you were talking about that mist or entity or whatever that you called Carl,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you think that was a sentient entity, or was that just an effect of your experiment, do you think?
Unknown. I can't answer that honestly. I can't say one way or the other. It seems like it had intelligence to it.
Go ahead. Sorry.
In other situations, I was enveloped by this stuff, and without machinery, actually, and was given a message to contact my lady in Austria, which I did do. I mean, this used to freak out the postal people. Like, the post office, I'd walk in there and the fax machine would turn on. Because in that time we communicated by faxes or telephone.
Magnetic personality?
She's in Austria, I'm here in New West, walking right in the post office and boom, on goes the fax machine. And then I started to actually see what she was seeing in Vienna. We both experienced this, and it was uncanny. It was quite uncanny.
You were seeing, visualizing?
She was seeing what she was seeing in Austria.
And
walking the streets, but I could see vaguely see it, not like 100%, but vaguely through. It's like two images, the images of here right now, and then the images she's actually looking at.
And this is a waking state?
Yep, absolutely. Mostly when I'm walking outside, too. Sometimes I'm walking outside and I feel like I'm out of, like, what am I doing in this primitive time period with these crazy-looking things and four wheels?
Well,
and these funny-looking telephone poles. That weird feelings come like that and go. But it's one of the pioneers in parapsychological research and writings has been George Jack Hauck and McDonnell Douglas, who's now retired and devoted most of his time to PK and telekinesis. And the Department of Defense is really involved in this stuff, and I got a lot of their documentation on it, too. And I think it's always been an interest for me, and my mother was very psychic.
So you mentioned earlier that you've heard voices, seen things during your experimentation.
Absolutely, all kinds of different crazy things, which actually, luckily, we can record it and take pictures of it.
And do you have pictures of, I mean, have you seen entities, people, different time period, different dimension? What do you think?
Seems like another dimension. There's entities in that dimension. Luckily, it's on tape. There's photographs of it that were taken, so they have somewhere here.
Is that
known to other people?
Is that like, go ahead.
Kind of like a metallic mist that came into my sister's garage, filled the entire garage, and put an image out, like of something, like a being. And I look at these pictures. I started seeing this stuff, and I said, okay, I must be losing my mind or going schizophrenic. I better double-check my reality thing here. So I got a camera. I still have it. A $22 camera at the time, and I started to hang on to it. And if I started to see anything unusual out there, I'd start taking pictures of it. And later on, these pictures, when they're developed, it actually shows these things.
And this is without your experimentation going on, right? This is just normal, every day?
This is normal, 1992, that particular year in New Westminster. So,
well, interesting.
Being, because I like to record stuff, because I don't really talk about stuff unless it's recorded, because a lot of people just sort of back away and think, whoops, that guy's a little out there. That's happened to me.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're experimenting with what you're doing, some people can think it's crazy. You're talking about things phasing in and out. Do you attribute that to part of quantum entanglement?
I would say so, yes. There's something I'm doing that's actually affecting a lot of different things in the quantum realm and on the subatomic level. Somehow it's working on the nucleus of materials. I do believe, I'm only theorizing, but somehow it produces a strong positive graviton flow, and also at the same time perhaps working with chronons. And I really got interested in subatomic physics when I was in Germany. With a bit of time on my hands when at home there, I would be studying the DESI documents, which are red documents on all the particle research they've been doing for a long, long time. And they get into exotic particles like dilation of time particles, and time-based suns, and all kinds of different things, and neutrinos.
So the government, you've worked in association with the government in some research projects. Is that right? Is that what you said earlier or alluded to?
Yes, absolutely. U.S. Army Intelligence, along with the Los Alamos National Laboratories, as well as Naval Research Labs. And what they're doing now, and I believe they probably replicated it, because I had some interesting input from Boyd Bushman, a friend of mine, at Lockheed Martin, a senior executive who actually appeared on TLC with investigator Nick Cook of James Defense Weekly.
Mm.
He wrote a book called Hunt for Zero Point, featured me in the book.
Cool.
And they came up with some very interesting bits and pieces of information.
So is the government, are they continuing your research independently?
That would be probably black operations. I would think they are. Absolutely.
Do you, are they keeping tabs on you all the time? I mean, are they listening now?
Maybe. I inform them what I'm doing. I just tell them this is my latest adventure. I mean, I'm not into secrecy. I just...
Mm-hmm.
I just say, well, watch TV, or this is what I'm doing now kind of thing. And my partner, George Hathaway, I believe, has probably replicated some things. He's funded by Prince Liechtenstein, who owns his own country. their main product is Hilti Tools. And I know the prince, mm-hmm. too. I've met, actually, we corresponded over many years by letters. And I met his... cousin, Prince Alfred von Liechtenstein, actually in San Francisco with industrialist Henry Dakin. And Henry's family used to make Dakin toys. And actually, I saw a Dakin teddy bear just not too long ago.
So what country does he own?
I'm sorry?
What country does he own?
Liechtenstein.
Oh, that's a country?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. And where is that? I'm not Mr.
It's, okay, it's in Central Europe between Austria and Switzerland.
Liechtenstein.
Okay.
54 square miles.
That I've heard. Okay, gotcha.
Mostly bankers and member of parliament. The one time he threatened to dissolve parliament by saying they sell it off to Bill Gates of the Wall Street Journal. It's interesting, UFOs and the Hutchison effect, and also firearms, antique firearms, art. He's an avid art collector and life extension. Hutchison effect, of course.
So, John, let's switch gears for a second. Do you think that, what's your stance on UFOs, and do you feel that UFOs may be tapping into the same energy source or zero point energy for their propulsion systems, or?
I would say so, from my observations of them. I have
Do you see any...
I have seen them. I took photographs of them, too. I have a lot of documents from the CIA people who are quite actually open about it, and because my ex is doing a film called Miracle of the Unknown, on UFOs. So what she did, she approached it on an angle where she was interviewing a lot of high-profile scientists and their opinions on UFOs. This is a three-part TV series aired on Entertainment Tonight, previewed, as well as has aired in about 75 countries to date. A very popular show. It hasn't aired in the United States or Canada as yet, but in doing this documentary, I got involved by contacting CIA people, Chris. I was assigned to privacy coordinator John Wright, who was actually quite helpful in releasing a lot of documentation to me. I had a choice of either going there and going through their library, reading room. I'd have to follow the CFR rules and regulations, of course. Or they would simply say, the other deal is we can ship you out all the stuff that's been released to date. So I said, okay, I'll do that route then, because it's kind of in a hurry for the documentation. So I had this massive parcel delivered for $89.10. I had to make a check out to the Receiver General of the United States. But in my request through the Freedom of Information Act, I also requested a sideline, which was unusual metals. Do you have anything on unusual metals? So covering that angle, I was able to get documents that weren't blacked out that showed actual parts of UFOs that exploded and their actual analysis of the metal that they found. So I found that kind of interesting, these reports.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, do you think that one of the things that you kind of broke up when you were explaining about the space propulsion, you said that the propulsion unit itself can actually distort space and time. Is that correct, John?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so I guess the question that begs to be asked is, so that would make it practical for interstellar travel?
100% and more. So some of these unusual effects may exist in nature. One unique place is Booker Bay, Australia, where these effects do happen in nature, and the other effects of time distortion at the South Pole. This was 2004 when they're taking measurements with weather balloons of strange clouds in the South Pole. They found that their instrumentation was reversed back 35 years. This is quite a repeatable experiment. This was brought to my attention yet again by Lockheed Martin's Lloyd Bushman and his team through emails, which I instantly made a hard copy of them and had them stashed somewhere. And this experiment went directly to the White House, I'm told, in the email.
Wow.
And that's one of the topics that I'm going to be covering in my network TV show is Booker Bay, Australia, where these effects happen. And reports were given out in 1995, labeled sensitive or confidential. And
well, you know, one of the things that have really interested me in regards to anti-gravity, I think, are the black triangles that are repeatedly seen in or were also detected over Belgium several years ago. And I'm just wondering if that's been part of the application, if part of the military has used the technology that you developed to create these type of aircraft.
I think so. Last year I was in Phoenix, Arizona for a while. Actually, Scottsdale with a lady. And I got married and divorced, so what can I say? But I saw one of those things going over her house.
Really?
I was looking at it. And this is the famous Phoenix Lights things. I didn't have the camera at the time, but the other time I did have a camera, well armed with a camera, and was sitting out on our balcony. But unfortunately, I should have brought the camera, but I did see it. And I recall also, in 1997, I was in L.A. with the film producers who were all excited about going out to Phoenix and catch all this stuff on tape. So, and to answer the question, I think that especially Lockheed Martin, Skunk Works, and group are making all kinds of unusual craft. Area 51 especially. That's really a hot area for all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, why don't you tell us about your possible, or is it possible or is it upcoming TV show?
It's upcoming.
Cool.
It's still in the works of being formulated and put together by two very faithful film producers and directors and agents down in Hollywood who have been working on this for 3.5 years. And it's going to be called the Hutchison Effect TV series. And we're going to be covering the Philadelphia Experiment along with ghosts, free energy, time travel, levitation.
Cool.
But we've got 13 episodes nailed down. Our grand finale will be the Philadelphia Experiment.
Well, that's great. Any idea when that might appear or be available?
Oh, we're still in negotiation with all the product placement people, and it's getting close. They finished the Race to Space, which will be a reality-based TV show, where they'll be training people to become astronauts. That was a mega-budget project. Now they have more time to deal with my show.
Good.
And once that gets going, it'll be... Actually, I think it'll be pretty good. I'll do my
best. Are they going to film that all in Vancouver, John?
Well, they're talking about Vancouver. Well, they dropped their studio down in L.A. Although we do have a big studio up here too, because it's Hollywood North.
Mm-hmm.
And I visited that particular studio about a week or so ago. It's massive.
That where X-Files was filmed?
X-Files actually was filmed in this location around here. I got some of their actual sets off the warships. If you see any of the old X-Files in the warships,
mm-hmm.
submarine stories, those were filmed on the ships I work on.
Cool.
And I took everything that they showed on the opening scenes of the submarine and said, aha, I'll take that thing, you know.
What's really? Out here? All right, well, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour, and we're going to take our last short break here. And when we come back, John, I'm going to ask you, you know, a couple of questions about where you're headed, what you hope to accomplish yet, and that sort of thing. So hang with us, and all of our listeners, too, hang with us. We'll be right back.
Georgia Paranormal Research Society is composed of individuals with a common goal, the scientific investigation of the paranormal. It is our hope that these investigations will allow those of us in the paranormal community to bring about answers that will benefit us, as well as helping to educate the general public. We approach all investigations and questions with the utmost professionalism and confidentiality required for the situation. If you are experiencing strange occurrences around your home or place of business, such as unexplained noises, smells, or visual phenomenon, these could be possible signs of paranormal activity. If you're interested in finding some answers to these questions, or if you'd like to have our team investigate the activity, visit us at www.wgprs.com for more information. Research, assistance, understanding. We're here to help you.
night, in the shadows, in the sky, it's Paranexus Universe. Darkness follows.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Doug Kelly with Paranexus Universe, and along with my co-host, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, happy Friday night, everybody.
We're talking with John Hutchison. Welcome back, John.
A pleasure, sir.
And the Hutchison Effect, we've been talking about a number of different things as it relates to, well, a wide variety of things. And just during the break, we were kind of talking about the Hutchison Effect and this, and John's research as it relates to the paranormal. And, John, you had a couple of interesting comments that way. I mean, I know you're into psychokinesis, or at least in parapsychology in that research. Can you elaborate a little bit on, again, just the connections or the connections that you see or the potential hypotheses to explain some of the stuff as it relates to your research?
I'm very close to interlinked myself. I know that there's areas of what the U.S. government was trying with psychotronics, using mind and machinery to cause all sorts of unusual effects. Like, I'll study that aspect of it. I'll study Dr. Rupert Sheldrake's work on morphic resonances. And I'm finding that myself, I'm experimenting with myself in thought in that, in manifestation of things through positive thought and manifestations, projecting it out there into the world. And usually I get all kinds of positive energy back, and because I will not entertain conspiracy stuff too much or negative stuff at all.
Hmm.
I'll try and be cooperative and communicate to people.
Well,
we're all equal in that, but I've been studying the biochemical aspects of
definitely
how the body works in the mind. And
So do you believe in spirits yourself?
Absolutely.
Okay, and a lot of these cases where people are seeing things or things are happening, psychokinesis, do you think that that's largely the human mind, or do you think it's a blend of both, or do you think it's more spirit-related? Any thoughts?
I think it's a combination of both, the interaction of the two.
Hmm.
Many interesting case histories on these kind of things. There's sometimes when people are totally overwhelmed by these energies too.
Yeah.
And I was overwhelmed when I was exploring an abandoned insane asylum, as well as with two women at the time, on this exploration of this place. It was actually used by the X-Files for filming. I don't know how they got out of there okay, but I mean, this place was really just full of it. It was built in 1878, and it left me with a very, very unpleasant feeling. I also found a cold spot, a very cold spot. The girls were behind me looking at it and saying, "What is that?" And I was feeling it with my hands, and I could see a very bright, swirling, kind of whitish light that didn't hurt my eyes. And I said, "I don't know. I think it's original. I think it really," I said to them, "I think it's an actual cold spot."
Wow.
And what the thing in the middle is, I don't know. It could be a life form of some kind.
So, John, where do you see your research going from here on out? What's your big objectives? What do you want to accomplish?
What I want to accomplish, really, is through television, doing this for TV so that anybody can glean information and start their own experiments and observations and studies in this whole realm.
Hmm.
It covers a large area, of course, but all
sure
kinds of energies and paranormal research, as well as anti-gravity and all kinds of unusual things that really are out there and been kind of forgotten about some of them.
So what's John's epitaph?
Well, on my tombstone?
Yeah, what's it going to say?
Oh, my goodness. It depends on all my girlfriends and what they write about me. I'm not kidding, guys. I don't know what they're going to say.
Yeah, well,
he was a nut. Did I was a real headache to the mayor of New Westminster or whatever? I don't know.
All right, we'll suppose for a moment that you actually write your own epitaph, you know, and leave it to posterity. What's it going to say? I mean, what's...
Okay, you're looking at me to write an epitaph?
Sure. I mean, who better to write your own app? Yeah, your app?
Okay, well, on my team's...
Not you.
He was a silly hobbit.
Okay, then.
I got a sense of humor, by the way, so...
Yeah, sounds like it.
No, I don't
do, you, do, your, right, do all your girlfriends think that, too?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He was one silly son of a bitch, right?
Oh,
well, would that be the epitaph? Would that be the epitaph?
I wouldn't go there. What they would say about me. He was a great, great, great lover.
Well, there oh. you go.
Well, yeah, okay. So we've gone from the Hutchison effect and quantum entanglement and all that crap to he was a great lover.
Yep, absolutely. That was a big
There you go. There's the added benefit of the Hutchison effect.
Well, that's what they call it. We found the real Hutchison
effect. That's it. Yeah, that's right. Hutchison effect.
I'm not kidding. That's what they say.
All right, man. Well, listen, I think we've covered a lot of stuff here tonight, and, you know, some very interesting stuff you're doing. I'm amazed by it myself, plus you got a cool lab. And I was telling John during the break, I'd love an opportunity someday when I grow up to be able to witness that, you know, to see that, and it just fascinates me. And I will tell you that I remember, like I was telling right at the outset of the program tonight, the first time I saw that levitation video when you had the plywood and the bleach bottle and, you know, whatever else you had there. And I'm looking at that thing and I'm looking at that video and I'm replaying it several times and I'm watching for, okay, is the camera being moved to, you know, simulate this? I mean, I'm just totally fascinated by it. You know, and seen it a bunch of times and a bunch of different videos. In fact, if you'd like to see some of the videos of this effect, just go to paranexusradio.org and click on the link, the archive for John's page. It's right there, and I've got several YouTube videos that I found. In fact, I think I found them on some of your pages. Anyway, they're there, and you can watch this effect and see some examples of the metal it's just amazing, you know, if you haven't seen them before. It's just amazing to watch. And so, you know, we're getting on with this. John, we really appreciate you taking your time to be with us tonight. And
we're going to look forward to your TV show, John, and we're hoping everybody in our audience will be standing by and waiting to watch it because it sounds terrific. And, you know, we're big fans of you and your work, and we most certainly want to keep in tune to how your work is progressing because we feel it's really important.
Well, I appreciate that. I'll try my best for everybody out there and the people that are building this TV show. I'll do my best for them, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, great. If you hang with us for just a minute and everybody else who has taken the time to listen to Paranexus Universe tonight, we appreciate your time as well. And if you're not already a member of Paranexus.org, please go take a look. We've got charter memberships right now, $5, a professional association of paranormal researchers, parapsychologists, cryptozoologists, ufologists. The whole point of Paranexus is to share information and to really discover some answers, to bridge the gap between all the different groups and to try to come to a consensus. And as I mentioned earlier, we have established an international standards committee with different individuals on it, being chaired by Dusty Smith at Daytona Beach Paranormal Research Group, great friend of ours and just a great lady. And we're going to be working on that and presenting that to, I guess, to the world and saying, hey, here's some standards to adopt in the area of paranormal research. But we've got a lot of stuff going on, not the least of which is the Paranexus Conference this coming October 23rd through the 26th in Tampa, Florida. We've got a number of great speakers lined up, interesting topics from psychic development to parapsychology to EVP analysis, equipment issues, and how to review and analyze other types of evidence, including EVPs and photographs and video, etc. We've got the Paranexus Challenge on Friday night, where we're going to have several teams of researchers going into a purportedly haunted place, which is being kept top secret right now. That's going to be broadcast live to the group if you're not one of the participants. And if you want to be, you can apply for that too. There's no cost to be part of the Paranexus Challenge. And we've got the Spirits and Shadows Costume Ball on Saturday night. You know, we've got a great, great conference lined up that's going to be full of education, networking opportunities, and, you know, some fun to get away. And it's a week before Halloween, too. So take a look at the Paranexus Conference. Take a look at paranexus.org. We'd love to have you as a part of that. And with that, we really appreciate, again, everybody's listening. John, thanks so much for being with us. And next week, we've got Chris Balzano. We're going to be talking about urban legends, so don't miss that program either. To everybody, hope you have a great night and a great weekend. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's Paranexus Universe.